The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The conflict we avoid with others becomes the conflict we endure within. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. Fun fact about ahoy. I don't know why, but I just decided to Google the history of ahoy, and I found this one quite interesting fact. So supposedly, Alexander Graham Bell suggested that ahoy should be the standard greeting when answering the telephone. But then it was Thomas Edison that suggested that we use hello instead. So I'm not really sure why the light bulb guy got to make the call on the telephone thing. I feel like maybe though, is this part of history that maybe isn't correct? I feel like maybe Alexander Graham Bell inventing the telephone is maybe one of those things that like it actually was somebody else. I could be wrong, but I digress. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I'm a complete and total shit show. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I am an adult child of an alcoholic family. I am the hot mess of this ship. And this is where we talk about how to heal from the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family, which I already said to you when I opened the episode. I already said that to you when I said, welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family, in case you weren't listening to me then. We curse here. You've been warned. I'm an acquired taste. You've been warned. We are so glad that you are here, and buckle up. It's quite the ride. It's sometimes quite a strange ride, but hopefully you will enjoy it. So today we are diving deep, or shall I say deeper, into conflict. And I am riding solo today, folks. I'm riding solo. And I think that this is an area that I actually do shine in. I think that I can navigate conflict and difficult conversations quite well. I might have a horrible Candy Crush addiction, but at least I know that if I do, you know, ever put the phone down and stop playing Candy Crush and have interactions with other people that results in conflict, I'll know how to navigate it pretty well. This is such a huge, juicy topic. I'll be honest, I've had total ADHD brain. You know when people say, I'll be honest, and it's like, are you not honest with me the other times? There's a lot of meat here, and I've had ADHD brain. Just all the different facets and angles and topics that are included in this, and how do I want to organize this all? But this is such an important topic: conflict, conflict resolution, the opportunities for growth personally and relationally are huge. The difference between a functional and a dysfunctional relationship lies in part in our ability or lack of ability to repair ruptures in relationships, whether those are small or large ruptures, and to use the emotions that are getting triggered within us as an opportunity for, you know, communication, for understanding, for healing, rather than for fuel, for fighting. You know, our triggers are truly our treasures. They reveal to us what still needs to be healed, our psychic blind spots, our unresolved wounds, our psychological defenses. And it is really in these moments of conflict that we are given a second chance to repair some of these childhood wounds. And we're granted two options. We're granted two roads to walk down. We can either choose the unconscious or the conscious route. So in the unconscious route, that is when these feelings reemerge, we choose not to make the connection between what might be getting triggered from our past into our present, not presence. We just act out or we project, you know, these painful feelings from our past and make them about the people, places, and things in our present. We dump on them and everyone around us, making our current situation much more painful and volatile than it really needs to be. However, if we take the conscious route, this is when we're using these triggers as an opportunity to grow. And when we do this, this is what we call post-traumatic growth. This is when we sit with these feelings and witness them. And when we do this, we get to meet these younger versions of ourselves, the vulnerable and hurt part of ourselves that has stayed hidden. And we are given the opportunity to give these parts of ourselves the comfort, the love, the acceptance, the attention that they so deserve. So that is our choice, folks. So let's just get into this. We're going to talk about all sorts of things related to conflict and conflict resolution. So let's get the damn show on the road. But first, let's talk about why you, yes, you need to damn the Join Shit Show. It's my online support community where I host online Zoom groups multiple times a week. This is where you can connect with other fellow recovering shit shows. This is a damn support network, a lifeline in your back pocket. We have chat feature. You can reach out at any point, at any time during the day. And I'm sure that there's somebody there who is there that can give you the help and support that you're looking for. We have sub communities within this. So we have a childhood sexual abuse group. We have a shit show parenting, divorce and separation, narcissists, neurodivergence. We have a bunch of things. I can't remember them all, but there's quite a lot. And this is quite a fun place to be. This healing work is hard, hard, hard shit. But we can make it a little bit more enjoyable when we do it in a community of people who get it and also are cool. And that's what this community is about. So damn the Join. Yes, you. Yes, you know who I'm talking to. Go to the show notes now. Take that little thumb. Click that little hyperlink and damn the Join. It's less than $1 a day. You can quit after a month. Next. Give me a follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, at Adult Child Pod. And last but not least, whatever you do, please give me a 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. It really does help in reaching as many people as possible. Thank you. Love you all. All right, my shit shows. Let's do the damn thing. First, I just came across this quote. This is a post that I just saw on Instagram like 45 seconds ago. I just want to read it out loud, and this is definitely something that we'll be talking about later on, but just going to throw it out there now. It says, gentle reminder, if someone is initiating a difficult conversation with you, it means they really value you and want you in their life, and not that they secretly hate you. Okay? Let's just put that out there for now. So what the hell is conflict? What the hell is conflict? Now, there are a million bajillion different definitions of conflict, okay? But I have decided on one that I think is best for the purposes of our conversation here today. So I am defining conflict as it's a disagreement, a clash of interests, or a struggle over differences that invokes an emotional response when we feel threatened or we feel the need to defend ourselves. So this is more of an emotional state, right? This isn't logical. This is more emotional. This is when we feel threatened or we feel the need to defend ourselves. So basically, when we enter a trauma response in some way. So let me give you a couple examples here so you can see what I mean. So let's take the scenario of two friends deciding what they want to have for dinner. So Jamie wants Italian, while Alex wants sushi. However, they are able to agree to compromise without any tension or emotional friction. So this does not become a conflict. Versus Alex is craving Italian and Jamie is craving sushi. So then when Alex dismisses Jamie's preference for sushi, Jamie then points out that they always go to Italian places. They always go and get Italian. And so then they both become frustrated. They refuse to compromise. This leads to them raising their voices of accusations about always getting their way, This then escalates into personal attacks, past grievances are brought up, and they both end up just pissed off, going home separately. Both of them are hungry. Okay, another example here. Now let's just stick with our pals, Jamie and Alex. So Jamie and Alex, they have a misunderstanding via text where Jamie misinterprets something that Alex says as being dismissive. Jamie then responds, asks for clarification regarding what was said, and realizes that the way they took it was completely not how Alex meant it. I can't remember who sent the fucking original text at this point, guys. Sorry. But basically, whoever's offended asked for more information and clarified it, realized that they totally had the wrong idea, and they both laugh it off and move on. Compared to Jamie is offended by one of Alex's text messages. It feels like it's dismissive. But instead of clarifying, they both just start assuming the worst about each other. And the exchange increasingly becomes more defensive. The messages back and forth are more defensive. Hurt feelings grow as each person reads into the other person's tone, leading to more frustration. And this misunderstanding just continues to escalate and escalate and escalate. Okay, let's just get the elephant out of the room right away. This conflict resolution shit is not typically our strong suit, right? And that's not of our own fault whatsoever. There's so many reasons for this. But I want to start off today's episode in getting an understanding of what are our thoughts, what are our beliefs as it relates to conflict? What was it like in our home growing up as kids? And what are we like today when we find ourselves in the midst of conflict? So I'm going to start off reading you some common misconceptions about conflict that we adult children of dysfunctional families may have. And let's just see which of these might resonate with you. So common misconceptions about conflict that us shit shows might have. So we might believe that nothing good ever comes from conflict, that it only brings pain and hurt and negativity. We might believe that conflict is always combative and hostile, that it always involves, you know, yelling, aggression, hurtful behavior. We might believe that conflict is all about someone winning and someone losing. We might believe that it's best just to avoid it at all costs. We might believe that conflict is an indicator of an unhealthy relationship, that conflict means that a relationship is doomed. We might believe that conflict needs to be resolved immediately. We might believe that only one person is at fault in a conflict. And the biggest one, and this might not be conscious, this is probably the biggest thing that is underlying most of our conflict issues, is that we believe that conflict will lead to rejection or abandonment. So perhaps just make a mental note of which of those resonated with you, because that is helpful information for you to have. So as I said, this is not our strong suit. And this is largely because we were not shown how to have healthy conflict and healthy communication in our homes growing up. Now, this can look many different ways, but ultimately, the communication, relationship, conflict templates that we developed from growing up in our homes is quite skewed. Now, conflict really is a normal part of all relationships. The healthiest relationships have conflict. It is spotting something that is wrong, and let's talk this out so that we can resolve this situation so that we can have a better relationship. But here's the catch. Conflict can only be resolved if both people are willing to do what it takes to resolve it. And this requires humility. It is, I'm willing to resolve this. I'm willing to learn from this. I'm willing to own my part in this. I'm open to the possibility that this could be a misunderstanding or that perhaps there's another perspective. I just came across this term. It's called accepting influence. And it is simply being open to the ideas and opinion of your partner or your friend or your family. By accepting influence, you acknowledge that your partner has a valid point of view. You welcome it. You are willing to be influenced and maybe have a perspective change by it. It is essentially saying you are important and your opinions matter to me, even when I don't agree with you. And it really, really sucks when you are the one that's willing and the other person is not. And it's really hard to not take that personally. It makes you feel like you don't matter, right? Like you're not worth it. There's something wrong with you. You're not of value to this person. They don't care about you. And that's not the case at all. It's not about us. It has nothing to do with us and everything to do with their wounds. And this is what emotional maturity, emotional sobriety looks like. Being able to recognize what belongs to whom without declaring that you or someone else is bad or wrong. Emotional sobriety is the level of focus that we have on the other person and their actions versus the part that we played and how this relates to the thematic wounds of our life. It is knowing that someone's inability to take accountability for their actions is not a reflection of your inherent worth. It is understanding that someone's inability to see their part does not make them a bad person. It just is an indication of the amount of truth that they can accept about themselves. So I'll just share a little bit about what conflict looked like in my home. Many of you have probably heard this before, but you know, I was thinking about the first time that I heard my parents fight. And this might not be accurate, but I think that it is. I think the night that I found out that my mom was an alcoholic, so I was 7, was the very first night that I sat on the steps and listened to them fight, which I would then do many, 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 many times. And, you know, it was like a moth to a flame. I would get this adrenaline rush from sitting there and listening to them argue. There were actually a couple of times that I remember walking into the room and yelling at them at the top of my lungs for them to stop fighting. There was only two things that they would ever fight about: my mom's alcoholism, or they would fight about money. My dad was an absolute control freak when it came to money. And these arguments, these conflict about money, I mean, it was really about very insignificant amounts of money. And I think I've shared before, like, we would go on these really nice vacations. Like, we went to Australia and we went to Japan, and just my dad having these total fucking meltdowns. When we were in Australia, it was when we were at a Chinese restaurant in Chinatown in Sydney, and my dad just losing his shit over this shrimp dish that I wanted to order. And then when we were in Japan, it was like over a cup of coffee. And this is why conflict never gets resolved. What we're fighting about is not really what we're fighting about. What's really interesting is just thinking about the money wounds of my parents and just the theme of money always being present in conflict. So I recently just heard this. My dad just told me this story for the first time about a couple months ago when we were out to dinner. And so he had an older brother. His brother was 8 years older than him. And his brother was the scapegoat. He was the problem child. He was always getting, you know, into trouble. And I guess there was one time when my dad was fairly young. I know, I would say maybe between the ages of like 10 and 13 or so, where my dad was home alone and his brother, my uncle, called the house and he had gotten arrested and needed my dad to come and bail him out of jail. And so my dad said that he like had to go into like his piggy bank and get the money out to go and bail his brother out, which such a fascinating story. And there's got to be a lot more there, a lot more money wounds as it relates to my dad's upbringing. So his dad, both of his parents were from Central Illinois, farming families. My grandmother, her mother died when she was very young. Her father was an abusive alcoholic. She ended up going and living in this home with, I don't know if it was like a priest or nuns, but basically she was kind of given up And she then ended up marrying my grandfather pretty young. And she really was just looking for somebody to take care of her. And I remember my mom, this is my dad's mom, but my mom would take care of my grandmother when she had cancer at the end. And my mom would go down there and spend long periods of time when her caregiver would go back to Germany for like a few weeks. And she told my mom that she never loved my grandfather. My grandfather was, he grew up in farming world and he actually became a pilot for Eastern Airlines and was like the only one in his family to like escape farm life in central Illinois. And then as it relates to my mom and her money wound stuff, I know that my grandfather was a tightwad. I know that my grandmother at one point had spending issues, had like credit card shopping issues. But what's interesting is my mom, so my dad, you know, just constantly freaking out about this money stuff. My mom has never ever had like a spending issue. She's never been materialistic. Like they are, you know, extremely wealthy, but my mom has never really cared about expensive clothing, expensive handbags, expensive jewelry, like whatsoever. But so these were like the two main things that they fought about. And they would yell and they would curse at each other. My dad was definitely the more aggressive one. Nothing physical ever happened, but there were always these, you know, threats of divorce. But then, of course, the next day, it's as if nothing ever happened. The next day, it is, how does pot roast sound for dinner? I do remember on one occasion with the, you know, like the divorce accusation getting thrown out in these fights, it never moved forward ever, except for I remember on one occasion that the fight did last for a couple days. And I do remember actually my mom, I don't know if she actually did or if she was just talking about it. I do remember on one occasion my mom talking about starting to look for a divorce attorney. And what's interesting in thinking about that experience is similar to how I would get excited to listening to my parents fight. I remember being excited over the idea of my parents getting a divorce. And truly, I think it was coming from a place of just that there being that more chaos, more dysfunction, more drama, more of that hit of excitement. But they never got anywhere, right? And I'm not really sure how often these fights happened. It wasn't all the time, but it definitely was not just every once in a while. Tim Fletcher has a couple great videos about conflict that I was watching and in preparing for this episode. And, you know, he talks about the fact that in families with complex trauma and dysfunctional family systems, conflict never gets resolved. And so in my family, you know, there would be some sort of a resolution, but the root cause, what they were actually fighting about, what the actual conflict was about, was not resolved because that was rooted in their unresolved trauma. Conflict never gets truly resolved because the reality is that what we are reacting to is not the situation itself. You know, my mom's alcoholism was never addressed. My dad's like trauma and triggers related to money and being controlling was never addressed. And so this is like where I say that we are a prisoner to our unresolved trauma. Like we are prisoners to how we respond. Our amygdala just gets hijacked. It's similar to knowing that you're having an overreaction to being in a relationship, knowing that the person that you're dating is an absolute fucking loser. You feel like you're gonna die, and consciously you know that that's absolutely ridiculous, but it doesn't matter. You still feel that way, right? You still feel that way. And the same goes with conflict. We can't really do shit about it. Our triggers, the way we show up in conflict, the way that we resolve conflict, unless we are willing to get down to the real causes and conditions of the unresolved trauma. Do you know how many times I've set the intention that on Sunday, I'm going to get up, I'm going to plan my meals out for the week, I'm going to go to the store, I'm going to get everything that I need, I'm going to come home, I'm going to make all my meals for the week. Do you know how many times I've actually been successful in doing that? Not once, folks, okay? Not one single time. But alas, I have found the perfect solution. Meet Sunbasket, a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your damn door. You get to pick and choose what you're in the mood for every week. Maybe one week you're feeling Mediterranean, maybe another week you're feeling a little carb consciousness. I like the sound of that. I most recently made, it was a spinach and strawberry salad with steak. It was damn good. So go to sunbasket.com/adultchild today to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/adultchild to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Okay, shit show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shit show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my younger shit show women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ADULTCHILD at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ADULTCHILD for 15% off today. All right, my shit show ladies, let me tell you about how I can make getting dressed so much easier for you. Armoire is a clothing rental membership where you get to build your perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you gotta do is take a 5-minute style quiz and then select from your personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new to you styles. So I love this because I'm on video quite often on interviews and social media content, and I don't want people to be like, is that the only shirt that this girl owns? I also would not consider myself in the know of what's hot and what's not. But with Armoire, I get to pretend like I'm a fashionista. So this is perfect for working moms, for stay-at-home moms, for any women who just don't feel like going to the store. Now, right now, you shit show ladies can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off your first month. So that is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/adultchild. That is armoire.style, armoire.style/adultchild to get 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear ever again. So this huge blow-ups followed by acting as if nothing ever happened the next day is super common in dysfunctional family systems. So I sent out a survey regarding conflict to the members of the shit show community, and this was by far the most popular answer for how conflict was handled in your home growing up. And this really is a form of unintentional gaslighting that occurs to the kids that are living in this home. You know, when there are these explosive fights, followed by the next day, everything is just peachy keen. I haven't said that. When was the last time you said peachy keen? I hadn't seen that shit in a long time. It sends a really conflicting message to us, right? Like, we remember how intense the fight was, the hurtful things said, the names that were called, the threats of divorce. But then when nothing, it's as if nothing happened the next day, we really start to question our own memory, our own reality, our own perception. This makes us wonder, like, was it really as bad as we thought it was? Or are we overreacting? Which then just leads us to, you know, distrust our own emotions. It invalidates our emotional reality. It leads us to question the legitimacy of our own emotions. It leads to chronic self-doubt and a diminished sense of self-trust. It also teaches us that conflict doesn't need to be resolved, that ignoring serious issues is an acceptable way to handle problems. And this just leads us to do the same in adulthood, to avoid conflict, to never resolve conflict. But this isn't the only way that conflict looks in dysfunctional families, so let's talk about some other ways. So you might have grown up in a home where there was no conflict at all because there were no emotions that were ever expressed in your family. So conflict seemed non-existent. So these families kind of operate in this emotional void where silence and detachment replaces honest communication, which just leads to this environment in which issues are never acknowledged, let alone resolved. And the impact that this has on a child is that we internalize the idea that emotions are not important. Emotions are shameful. Emotions are too much to handle. We might come to believe that healthy relationships are devoid of emotional expression, which leads us to difficulty in forming deep, authentic, intimate relationships. We might grow up thinking that communication is unnecessary and unproductive, especially when it is emotional. Or perhaps you grew up in a home where the conflict was passive aggressiveness or the silent treatment, where you feel the tension, but nothing is ever resolved. So some families, instead of direct confrontation, they go about it in a, you know, a passive aggressive way. And this tension is just palpable. It is like hanging in the air, like a thick fog, but no one ever addresses a damn thing. And for a child growing up in this environment, well, they might internalize that they are to blame for this unspoken tension, that somehow they are inadequate and because they can't figure out how to fix the issues. This leads to feelings of guilt, of shame, of anxiety. They might learn that relationships are fraught with hidden dangers and that direct communication only leads to rejection or further conflict. This can make it really difficult in trusting other people or engaging in honest conversations. Or perhaps you grew up in a home where it was just constant conflict. Arguments and disagreements were the norm. No room for peace or genuine connection. Again, the child might internalize the belief that they are inherently flawed, that they are unworthy of love, that this constant conflict is because of them. They might come to internalize that relationships are inherently conflictual and stressful, leading them to either accept conflict as like a normal part of a relationship or to avoid close relationships altogether. They might learn that communication is synonymous with conflict and that expressing oneself will inevitably always lead to an argument. So now let's pivot the conversation into looking at the ways in which we as adults handle conflict. And I'm hoping at this point, based off everything that we've discussed, right? We've discussed that the environments, the dysfunctional family systems that we grew up in did not teach us how to do this, did not teach us how to handle conflict, did not teach us how to communicate. We've talked about how in conflict, it is triggering that flight, fight, freeze response within us. So I just ask that we just put down the shame as we're now looking at our behavior, okay? Like, we're not bad people. We are a product of our environment, of our upbringing. We all have not handled conflict and communication that well. But we're here we are. We are talking about this. We are all taking action to improve in this area by listening to this podcast episode. So I just really ask that you show yourself some compassion as we kind of shift this conversation into looking at ourselves, okay? So I want to share a story I've shared before from my childhood that really kind of cemented the way in which I showed up in conflict. So in the first grade, I had this friend, Courtney, and every day I would come into school and I never knew if today was going to be a day where Courtney was going to be nice to me or if today was going to be a day where Courtney would be so mean to me that I would get into the car at the end of the day and I would just be like hysterically crying. And my mom would be there to comfort me. And then she would actually call up Courtney's mom and talk to her about it and like almost try to like get her to stop. And I mean, it was so bad to where we would have like a play date after school one day. And then the next day I would come to school and she would just be like so, so mean to me. And this just kept happening over and over again. And I just think about, what did my little girl need at that point in time? Like, what would have been the right healthy way for my mom to approach this, right? Because like she's trying to help. She calls my friend's mom, but it doesn't change. You know, she continued to let me hang out with her. And it really would have been nice to hear like, hey, Andrea, you don't have to be friends with somebody that you don't know on a daily basis whether or not this person is going to be nice to you, whether or not this person likes you. You deserve better than that. You deserve to have friends where you know how they feel about you. So it's just conflicting messages, right? Because there she was to comfort me when I was crying. There she was, you know, trying to help by calling Courtney's mom, but nothing changed. And she, you know, continued to allow me to spend time with her. And that really set a message that really internalized this belief in me that, you know, you just take what you can get. If they're nice to you one day, then yay, like, wow, lucky you. Like, it's just, you just take what you can get, right? You're not worthy and deserving of having a friend or somebody that always wants to be your friend. Like, you should just count yourself as lucky that today's one of the days that this person's nice to you. And so that is how I showed up in mostly, it was romantic relationships. Like, I'm trying to think, how did I show up in conflict with friends? I mean, I didn't really have friends, well, until I got sober, but where this really showed up was in romantic relationships. And the thought of ever bringing up something from my end, like if my feelings were hurt or, you know, if they had done something or I caught them in a lie, or even just asking them where they stood in the relationship, I had no voice because I felt like if I brought anything up that I would be seen as needy, pathetic, desperate, and so I wouldn't say a word and just totally afraid of rocking the boat, right? And this is how I was somewhat in friendships too, but at a certain point, I feel like I learned how to do this, how to have difficult conversations and how to handle conflict and how to receive feedback from other people that maybe I hurt their feelings, and getting to a place where I know that I make mistakes and that I am not a mistake. And I think that's that shame piece, right? I think a large part that contributes to our difficulties in handling conflict is this shame versus guilt thing. I think that we feel this deep sense of shame when we mess up, when we hurt someone's feelings, that it's too fucking painful to be able to have those conversations when in reality, we all screw up. We all screw up. We all are going to hurt somebody's feelings from time to time or have there be a miscommunication. And we are not mistakes. We just make mistakes. And I think that that is one of the largest components that causes relationships to end in conflict is because of shame. I have lost so many friendships that I've really, really cared about, people that have been very important to me, because the other person was not able to have a difficult conversation or able to own up and take accountability for their actions. And that's really sad. You know, that makes me like really, really sad. And this is something that I was talking about my therapist yesterday. What she was saying to me was, you know, we've been working together since 2018. And she made the comment to me that she can see or she can hear in me how, you know, when I talk about issues now over the years, it's less and less and less about the other person and what they did, like shitting on them or blaming them. And it's more and more about me and how this situation plays into these themes of my life, these thematic wounds in my life, and what it means for me in the big picture, and what does it mean for me in my growth, and what still needs to be healed. But it's this very interesting place of like having validating my feelings, right? Like having my feelings be valid. It is valid for me to be upset, to have my feelings hurt when somebody like ghosts you or just dips out because they can't have a difficult conversation, right? It's legitimate for me to feel that way. However, it's not about me. It really is not about me. It is about that person and their issues. But we obviously take it personally, right? We take it personally. We think that it's about us. So it's a matter of validating those feelings, holding space for the other person that like, this is their shit. It's not about you. The way that you're taking this personally, that part of it, your feelings are valid, but you thinking that this person's doing this because there's something wrong with you, that part of it is not valid. But then also like holding space for the rage and the anger, the injustice of having this happen to me so many times of like, this is fucked up. And like, people don't, you know, like people don't deserve to treat me. Like I deserve to be treated better. Like, so then holding space for that rage and that anger and that feeling of injustice, but it's not really directed at that person, right? It's not at them. It's just kind of at the whole life theme, the, you know what I'm saying? So it's just balancing all of those things out. And it's really complicated. It's really complicated and it takes a lot of work, but it is absolutely necessary that we be willing to look at ourselves in this way. You know, number one, it's not fair to other people. Like, what does it say? Like, if you don't heal what hurt you, you'll bleed on people who didn't cut you. So it's not our fault that we turned out the way that we did. It's not our fault. There's not something inherently wrong with us or flawed with us. We're a product of our upbringing, so we don't need to shame ourselves or step into that like we are fundamentally broken. However, we need to take responsibility for our own healing so we don't bleed on the people who didn't cut us. But more importantly than that is, as I said before, our ability to repair conflict is what is the make it or break it for a healthy, functional relationship. And each and every one of us is so worthy and so deserving of having healthy, functional relationships. So this just isn't about not fucking over other people, but also not fucking over ourselves. You know, we deserve to have healthy, fulfilling relationships with other people. And that requires that we learn how to handle conflict in a healthy way. So let's now break down the three conflict styles: fight, flight, and fawn. Now, I think the vast majority of us are going to fall into the flight or the fawn bucket. If we look at the laundry list, avoiding conflict, seeking approval, an inability to stand up for ourselves is riddled throughout that list. So the vast majority of us are going to fall into that avoidant or fawn accommodating camp. But there might be some of us that fall into the fight camp too. Let's start with avoidant. An avoidant can really be misunderstood by others as them not giving a shit, as them being, you know, disinterested. We can perceive their avoidance as not thinking that the relationship is important enough to handle the conflict, that it is indicative of them not caring. But that's not necessarily the case. What this is really about is fear of the consequences of conflict. As we've discussed before, that we learned that there was nothing good that comes from conflict, that conflict only causes pain. There's also a fear of emotional exposure. So we might have grown up in a home in which our emotions were weaponized against us. We learned that to be vulnerable and to express our emotions only led to us feeling hurt. We also might have a fear of inadequacy in the sense of we don't know how to communicate. We don't feel like we know how to articulate what we're feeling in. We're afraid of saying the wrong thing. And while this might not be malicious, we can't disregard the negative impact that this has on a relationship, right? Because things are never openly discussed. Misunderstanding continues to be unchecked. Resentment builds. There's also a lack of intimacy. So relationships are only able to be at this superficial level if we're not willing and able to go there when it comes to conflict. But there is an element of avoidance that is really toxic, that is abusive. When it comes to silent treatment, when it comes to stonewalling. So we'll talk about that some next week. So then we have our fawners, our accommodators, just another version of avoidance, but with a little twist. So this involves constantly yielding to others' demands or preferences to avoid conflict. This is always taking the blame, always apologizing, never having a voice. These are people who have learned to suppress their own needs, their own emotions in order to appease a volatile or critical parent. So the beliefs here are my needs are less important than keeping other people happy, that saying no makes me a bad or selfish person. It's better to sacrifice my own happiness than to risk upsetting someone else. And then we have our fight response. So this could be either straight up aggressive, passive aggressive, but essentially we are going to feel the need to defend ourselves. We take any sort of conflict, confrontation as a personal attack. Doesn't even matter how the hell they say it. I'm sure you've had people like this, right? It doesn't matter how you say it. It doesn't matter how you say it. They're going to take it as an insult. It could even be a compliment, and these people take it as an insult. So these are people that deflect, defend, and feel the need to lash out, to fight back to any sort of conflict, criticism. And there's some of us that might go like really scorched earth. We might take it to a dirty level, to a really ruthless level, with the hope of like, if I just rip this person to shreds, hopefully they'll never try to have conflict with me ever again. Definitely have been on the receiving end of that. The other thing that I want to bring up here is, as we talk so much about how a healthy relationship, a functional relationship, when there's no conflict or there's no chaos, how that's boring. So some of us might be on the avoidant or the fawning side, but we also have this relationship template from our family that a relationship, in order for there to be like love and intimacy, there has to be chaos. There has to be fighting. So maybe we feel like the relationship is starting to drift apart. And based off our childhood experiences, we might have learned to equate conflict with intimacy. So what better way to bring each other closer is to start a fight, get that conflict going, so then we can make up and feel that closeness again. So that is like a super toxic pattern that I know so many of us have gotten into, that I totally have, of this, yeah, chaos, repair, but it's not really repair. The other thing here too is, and this could also be something that an avoidant would potentially do, that's a fight side, to where, you know, we start to feel like something's off. We feel like the other person is going to eventually leave us. They always do. We always get abandoned. We always get rejected. So we'll start some shit, right? So we might as well just get it over with. This relationship is going to end anyways. So we'll just start some conflict, start a fight, just to get it over with. Let's just end this shit right now. So those are two elements of where a fight response could come through when traditionally we're more of a avoider or a fawner. So that is where I'm gonna leave it off for today, folks. So next week, we will get more into the meat and potatoes. So really looking at conflict resolution and how to handle it, which most importantly, the first thing that we need to be able to do is make sure that we're seeing things accurately. Is our perception accurate? As I said, we're going into that fight flight response in conflict. So it's about regulating ourselves and then taking the time to figure out what the hell's going on here. What's my part? What's not my part? What part of my perception is accurate? What part of it might not be? So that we can then go into conflict resolution in the most healthy way possible. So we'll talk about what does that actually look like, the conflict resolution part. We'll talk about when is conflict resolution not a good idea or not possible? What is the difference between conflict and emotional abuse? And what is the difference between conflict resolution and conflict management? So we got a whole bunch of good old shit to dive into next week. And feel free to hit a gal up if you have any specific questions, comments, concerns that you want me to address next week in the episode. Love you guys. See you soon.